Primary season is almost at an end after last night's elections in five states, including California. Utah is the last of the 50 states to go to the polls in 2 weeks on June 26th. In California, the new open primary system predictably resulted in giving voters the choice of only two candidates from one party in November. In the closely watched San Fernando Valley primary for Congress, Democrat Brad Sherman got 42% of the vote, and Democrat Howard Berman followed with 32% of the vote. The two will face off again in November. And Democratic rivals Laura Richardson and Janice Hahn each survived as the top two vote-getters in the District 44 primary. They will run against each other in November, with Janice Hahn getting nearly 60% of the vote and a large lead over her opponent. In Northern California, District 2 Progressive Democrat Norman Solomon came in third place to Democrat Jared Huffman and Republican Daniel Roberts, which means that Norman Solomon will not be on November's ballot. Statewide, Proposition 29, which would have added a dollar tax to every pack of cigarettes sold in the state to be put toward cancer research, was narrowly defeated, with 49.2% of voters approving the measure, but 50.8% voting against it after weeks of an attack campaign funded by tobacco companies. Proposition 28, which altered term limits for state legislators, was approved by voters 61% to 38%. Here in Los Angeles, the hotly contested primary race for county district attorney, the controversial but best-known and well-funded candidate, current city district attorney Carmen Trutanich, came in third, ending his bid. Chief Deputy District Attorney Jackie Lacey led the pack with 32% of the vote, followed by Deputy District Attorney Alan Jackson, who garnered 23% of the vote. We turn next to Wisconsin. Embattled Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker weathered a recall election yesterday, winning 53% of the vote and defeating Democratic challenger Tom Barrett. Walker became the first governor in U.S. history to survive a recall election, and he did so with a greater number of votes than he had originally garnered in 2010 when he first became governor. The recall election was the culmination of a year-long battle by progressives, labor groups, and Democrats to push back against Governor Walker's move to undermine public employee labor unions. Among the factors being invoked to explain Walker's success yesterday was the enormous amount of campaign funding he received, outspending his opponent by 3-1, and spending more on the race than any candidate had ever spent on any office in Wisconsin history. Also among the factors affecting yesterday's results is thought to be President Obama's refusal to campaign in Wisconsin leading up to the election, and the fact that white working-class voters outside major cities are shifting toward the GOP. Also, in explaining the impact of yesterday's elections, the LA Times' David Lauter said, "The recall made the third election in the space of a year in which labor failed to defeat Walker or a Walker proxy. The unions lost a fight to oust a Republican state Supreme Court justice and fell short of recalling enough GOP state senators last summer to put Democrats in control of the chamber." My guest is Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. Welcome to Uprising, Robert.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me just ask you how you reacted to the results from yesterday. I suppose you and others weren't too surprised, given that polls leading up to the election showed Walker consistently with a small edge over Barrett. However, our previous guest, John Nichols, earlier in the week, had thought that most of the standard polls were not really measuring non-traditional voters, younger folks, people of color who might have been expected to show up in this election.
Well, at the end, it's not surprising. We were very involved in the Get Out the Vote effort, our organization. We had convinced ourselves that we were getting a lot of excitement and there'd be record turnout. And there was higher turnout than any previous non-presidential election in at least 25 years in Wisconsin. But it was not enough to overcome what Walker is able to do outstate, outside of Milwaukee and Madison, and his tremendous turnout in the Republican areas, especially the Milwaukee suburbs. But we looked like we were getting near presidential turnout yesterday, so a lot of us were hopeful. And I can tell you, I was at the major election party that progressives and labor folks had in Milwaukee, and it was pretty deflating for everyone. But at the end of the day, I mean, we can talk about why it happened, but it really can't be about one election if it's a movement. So I feel we need to keep building this movement. If one election can beat a movement, it wasn't a movement at all.
Well, given that this is the sort of the next in the line of defeats that Democrats have faced in the election, I'd like to ask you what you take away from the election and how do you respond to the criticism that some had more than 6 months ago that channeling all of the anger on the streets of Wisconsin and other cities into the electoral process may risk deflating the movement?
I think that's a very legitimate concern, and it's been raised by people, by strong progressives. And it's a problem in our country because it's hard to find another outlet. That Walker kept going and going. There was no other way to stop him. And, of course, a lot of people who are involved in politics feel more comfortable putting in the electoral arena, but it creates this all-or-nothing kind of proposition where it can damage the movement. So I'm not sure there was a good alternative. The workers were not prepared for a general strike. But unfortunately, it's throughout American history, movements that have channeled themselves into election have often been defeated. And so it's a problem, and it's a movement problem, quite frankly.
And what is the solution?
It's a very good question. I think there's going to be a lot of soul searching about this. We're just getting over the wreckage of this, but we need to figure out how to do what the right did. The right actually was born the modern conservative movement in this country in a huge electoral defeat, the landslide against Barry Goldwater in 1964. And they kept coming and coming, whether they won elections or not. And that's the kind of movement we need to build. I really believe that something was started in the streets of Madison last year, and I think it helped inspire the Occupy movement. And we need to build on that movement. It cannot be purely electoral. Ultimately, it has to win elections at some point, but to have to go up against all of the money, Walker had over $30 million. There was $22 million that came in from conservative interests on the air as well. It was actually an 8-to-1 gap between the Democratic candidate and Barrett and Walker. And as you pointed out, Democrats were divided. We did not get the full support of the National Democratic Party. And, of course, Walker got the full support of the entire conservative infrastructure nationally. So that was a huge difference.
And, again, this seems to be one of those ongoing examples where progressives aligning with the Democratic Party find themselves disappointed.
I think that's a very good critique right now, and it's something that needs to be seriously considered. I think the idea of an independent political movement is going to have a lot more potential here. There's been talks about that going on for a while, but this is a very good example about how just aligning with one party doesn't help. It's how the populace, of course, lost over 100 years ago. And we either have to do what the conservatives did and take over a major political party, which is what they've done since 1964, or we need to create an independent political force, things such as the Working Families Party in New York, but other examples of that where you don't have ballot fusion like you don't in a lot of states such as Wisconsin.
Robert Craig, does this election and this whole process leading up to the election and beyond also teach the lesson that many have already learned the hard way that ultimately elections are about money and elections will tilt where the money is?
They're a lot about money, and that's gotten much worse since the United decision, obviously. In fact, I wrote an op-ed with a couple other leaders in this state about how we've legalized bribery and the idea that it's illegal to have $100 given to someone under a table, but it's okay to give them $500,000 or spend millions on their behalf and get something, and that's not bribery, is absurd. Of course, we don't have the politics in St. Louis, Wisconsin to change that, but the electoral system has gotten worse, and Democrats have been complicit. So have some labor leaders because they have had money to spend in politics. You actually had labor unions writing amicus briefs in favor of this is the United decision, and that is absolutely uncorked. A massive flood of billionaire money and corporate money, and it's going to make it much, much worse. Wisconsin is an example of how bad the current campaign finance system is for progressives trying to win elections.
And I suppose unions, no matter how much money they can afford to throw into an election, will never be able to compete with billionaires, with Koch brothers, et cetera.
No, and they have less and less resources because they're shrinking. And this was a direct, this is a deliberate strategy. I really believe that I was quoted in the Atlantic magazine this morning that this is going to other states now, that Wisconsin was a test case, a petri dish. And I think that other public sector unions in other states, especially ones in the Midwest, between the coasts, are going to be under similar threats. It's going to embolden other leaders of the Scott Walker type to go after public sector unions, because Walker's goal here was not fiscal savings. You could have dealt with the budget deficit without abolishing unions. It was power and trying to make Wisconsin a permanent red state. It's part of a national conservative Republican strategy, and it will go to other states now.
Well, let's look toward what may happen then. Walker, in winning the recall election, said it's time to put our differences aside and find ways to work together to move Wisconsin forward. Is that an indication of a conciliatory approach to try to unify Wisconsin, a state that has become so highly polarized since his assault on labor?
Unfortunately not. He made these sort of noises last year during the protests as well. Really, Scott Walker is suggesting his way or the highway. He's one of the most divisive politicians in recent American history, and his whole it's a divide and conquer strategy. And so he'll be happy as long as Democrats go along with his policies, but he isn't offering any kind of compromise at all. He believes he's entirely right. And so I don't see any way to actually work in anything like a bipartisan or non-ideological way with this man. He is in fact, going to be emboldened to move forward. So that's all just kind of a cover for the voters, because a lot of voters are fatigued, didn't like the whole long recall process. And so him telling them he's going to put the conflict behind us and work with other people, that sounds good to people and is reassuring, but from a policy standpoint, he doesn't mean it in the least.
Robert Craig, what does the election result mean for November's general election? I mean, here from California, it's not easy to necessarily see how exactly the recall election reflects Wisconsin's political tendencies. This is a swing state. Does Walker's win automatically mean that Wisconsin will tilt toward Mitt Romney in November?
I don't think it does, and that was part of President Obama's calculation at coming into the state. We actually have exit polling that showed that there were a number of voters who were voting for Walker and for Obama. As incoherent as that seems to people who are, you know, seriously involved in politics and in movements. And so that's Obama's calculation. I think it probably makes the state closer. I mean, it gives the Republicans momentum. It deflates Democrats and progressives in Wisconsin for the time being. But November's a ways away. This recall election may have helped in some ways because we did have, between all the progressive groups and labor unions, a tremendous get-out-the-vote effort in the African-American community in Milwaukee, and it did turn out in very large numbers, just not enough to swamp the statewide totals to overcome that. And so that will help President Obama. But I really think long-term that the National Democrats, if they allow the organized labor to be destroyed state by state this way, they will not win elections long-term, even if President Obama can be reelected this one time.
And perhaps it shouldn't be surprising that those who support Walker also support Obama, given that Obama has not been as good a friend to labor and to working people as he has been to Wall Street. And it also sort of raises the question of the calculation he made, given that he had support among Walker supporters. Could his presence have swayed those Walker supporters toward Barrett? Or was he, I suppose, worried that he would lose support among them if he showed up to support Barrett?
I think he was concerned about moderates and independents who are less ideological, who for some reason are able to think that support an Obama and a Walker at the same time and not see that as inconsistent. He could have helped with base turnout, especially in the African-American community. It was mostly a turnout election, and the problem was is that even though we got high turnout, 58%, I think we needed around 65%. Even then, Walker unfortunately overperformed in traditionally Democratic areas around the state, like Eau Claire and Wausau, out towards the Mississippi River. And so that was a problem. But Obama could have helped with the base vote, but he's more concerned, it appears, about his own standing with swing voters in Wisconsin. I think that's a very short-sighted calculation. It can't just be about his own election and not about anything else. But unfortunately, so I'm fairly disappointed in that calculation. You're right. It's a problem. Every Democratic president seems to operate in that fashion. It's not new.
Robert Craig, just looking at Scott Walker's campaign, what was the message that he was campaigning with in the state that swayed voters? Was his message to stand firm on the assault on labor, or was he using a different tack?
That was part of it, though he didn't call it an assault on labor. He talked about his reforms working. He went on and on about how much money had been saved, as if it had not cost anything whatsoever. And he really, especially with the money behind him, confused voters about his jobs performance, which was by the only comparable statistics, the worst in the country. And even if these new statistics he put out to confuse the issue 2 weeks 2 weeks before the election, it was still the worst in the Midwest. And so he tried to make a connection between his bold reforms. He was courageous. He just talked about the reforms. in general terms, and then employment picking up and closing a deficit as if that was new, that Wisconsin has a constitutional requirement that you close the deficit. Every governor does it. And so he created this kind of positive message, and then he had another piece where he really appealed to the idea that a recall was unfair, that this is all divisive and people are tired of all this, and so you could put an end to it by voting for him. And the right did a very good job of trying to convince people that recalls are somewhat somehow illegitimate, and I think there was couple percent that swung on that issue as well.
Finally, Robert Craig, you're the executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. What is the next step for the broad movements, which of course I understand aren't homogeneous, but what's the next organizing step? And I'm sure most people are going to take a few weeks off after the enormous effort yesterday, but is there a plan for the long term?
There's been a lot of discussion, and there's the outlines. We need to calculate what happened last night in developing that. But quite frankly, we have a very unequal state right now. We have the highest level of black non-employment in the whole country right now in Milwaukee. And so we need a movement that's capable of actually improving people's lives, not just something that's not quite as harsh as conservative Republican rule. I think it's about dedicating ourselves to a movement first and foremost, and not just to elections, even though we need to win elections ultimately. And so I think, and quite frankly, the other thing we've got going for us is that, to quote the philosopher Kenneth Burke, I think conservatives are going to be rotten with perfection in Wisconsin. That is, they are going to continue to go over the top and do ridiculous and outrageous things. And they will push the envelope so far under Scott Walker that it will create organizing opportunities for our movement. And we need to be in a position to take advantage of them and build permanent power with those opportunities.
Robert Craig, give out the website for Citizen Action of Wisconsin.
It is citizenactionwi.org, or just Google Citizen Action of Wisconsin. We have a very active Facebook page, which will keep you up to date on everything going on in Wisconsin. So just like us on Facebook if you'd like as well.
And we'll post that on uprisingradio.org later today. Robert Craig, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Robert Craig is the executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. The website, again, is citizenactionwi.org, or find them on facebook.com.